back to it. It's on there, so.
Okay. So, Rabbosai, our limud of Hilchas Lashon Hara is every day as a schos for the refuah of Yosef Dope Chayla, Hishtav Refuah Shleva, Bekorov, Zershaw Chayla Yisrael. Actually, one of the speakers yesterday said a nice, mentioned a nice vort, I can't remember who it was. He said that, you know, after lining today, we said all the year old signs. I think there are four or five of them. Yotzim Refeh Vish Roshraim, Yotzim Refeh Vish Roshraim, and then he said the last one is Achenach Obeis Yisrael, Ansur Batorah Vashiv Yot. Why don't we say Yotzim Refeh Vish Roshraim, that Achenach Bnei Yisrael, Ansur Batorah Vashiv Yot, should have what's called. See, he said, when Achenu B'nai Yisrael, when we treat everybody as brothers, that's Yirotim Ulfanechol. That's the that's the bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, the Achenu K'bei Yisrael, treating everybody as equal brothers, is the equivalent of Yirotim Ulfanechol Hashem L'Kenu L'Kei
Aviseinu. When they all keep the same Torah, is that what you're referring to?
I'm referring to when they all keep the same Torah. Yeah. Okay, so we learned yesterday the halacha, which was that although we are believing, we're not believing Lashon Hara that we hear, but we can believe it to the extent that we protect ourselves. Nevertheless, if somebody goes up, a friend of mine goes up to somebody who's done me harm and says to him, how could you do that? It's a terrible thing that you've done, and it's a chutzpah that you've done it, and you caused damage, or you caused harm, or you caused insult, or you caused hurt, etc., etc., and the guy is quiet and doesn't answer back and doesn't say anything, then the halacha is that that's not regarded as an indication that the story is true. The fact that he doesn't deny it doesn't mean that the story is true. Why? Because there's a Gemara that says that one of the middos of Klal Yisrael is Hane Elovim Ve'enom Olvim, those who are insulted and don't insult back. Shomim Cherposon, they hear criticism, Ve'enom Meshivim, and they don't answer. And he says, in a practical level, sometimes a person doesn't answer back because he doesn't think he'll be believed. Or he doesn't want to create a machlokes, because obviously if he denies it, then the other person will argue back again and it'll end up in the machlokes. That's one point. And secondly, he may not be believed at all, so of course he's going to deny it. He's bound to deny it when he's accused of doing something wrong. Okay, he believes he won't be believed, right? So therefore, there might be other reasons, extraneous reasons, why a person doesn't answer back. It's not necessarily an admission of guilt. Okay, that's the end of that halacha. We had it in Hilchos Lashon Hara. Now we have it in Hilchos Rechilus. Now comes this interesting question, but what happens if you hear Rechilus or Lashon Hara? You hear a piece of information which is critical of someone else from someone that you believe absolutely and implicitly. The Tzaddik Hador tells you a piece of information about somebody else. Yeah, and you've got no doubt whatsoever that that person would not tell a lie. He would not tell a lie. He would not tell. He's somebody who's totally and utterly trustworthy and is impeccable in his conduct. And therefore, you regard what he says as Kodesh Kodshim. Now, question is, can you now believe that person if he tells you something? Obviously, we said, if he tells you something which is warning you, like we said with Gedaliah ben Achikom, it's warning you that somebody's got a plot to kill you and assassinate you or whatever it is, then Avada, you have to take precautions. You believe it to that extent. But can you actually believe it's true when you have an extra dimension, which is that the person who's telling you this information is not just your average person, but is somebody who's totally trustworthy? The Mishnah Berurah, yeah, says the Chofetz Chaim, Is the Kabbalah Shechilus who afilo me'ish de mehemon lo kishnayim? Right? If you hear Eidos in Bezdin, then you are allowed. Two Eidim come along to a Bezdin, and they give Eidos, which is critical of someone else, that you're allowed to believe. Al pishnayim Eidim yokum dover. That's a pasuk in the Torah. So therefore, if you've got somebody who you believe so strongly, as if it were two Eidim in Bezdin, nevertheless, he says, you're not allowed. Is the Kabbalah Shechilus, says it, and there is no aspect you can't find to be don lechavskus. So the information seems to be true, yeah. Now, but he says there are conditions attached to that, and B'liedu will speak about that. The person who is Mehem on Kiblei Trey, who is believed like two people, is more believed than your average person in the street. But we'll discuss that tomorrow.
Start with the Turnaway Northwest London, Monday, Tesebov Kislev, 16th December. Rabbi Shlomo Landau Shlita, amassing real wealth. This week's Torah is sponsored by Shlomo Shlomo Shlachinu Yeshua Eretz Israel.
Good morning and welcome to Torah Way. I want to begin first of all with Hakar Satay for this opportunity, and particularly to my very dear Chavar Abdur Yitzkwitz, who Shavar for Shalem and Meheira Mitzvashem. It's interesting, I got to meet him by giving this share, and we became very fast friends, and it's a schus that I continue that friendship. So, whatever inspiration and Torah we have from this should definitely stand by him. So, this past week, if I'm not mistaken, there's a rabbi here in London, his name is Rabbi Aubrey Hirsch.
Yeah.
And he did a segment on the Rothschilds, correct? A number of people in England, for some reason, felt it was important for me to know that. Probably because my mother's maiden name is Rothschild, and they felt that I would want to listen to it so I could know more about my roots. So I just want to straighten something out before we even talk about wealth or we talk about Ashirus, and that is that they say that Baron Rothschild, when he was on his deathbed, he called his two sons in, Usher and Usher Rothschild, the first one that started off the whole, the progenitor of the dynasty, like we would say, or the dynasty, like you'd say, I think, right? He called him in, and he called two sons in, and he says to one of the sons, he says, "To you I bequeath the wealth."
To
and to the other son, he says, "To you I bequeath the seichel, the brains." So people ask me if I'm related. I say, yes, but we didn't get the wealth. Okay, so speaking about wealth, I want to share a story, which I'm going to alter the details and adjust the drop, but it's a very powerful story, and I shared it many times. I shared it once, and it went very, very far, because I think the story talks a lot to the heart of the concept of Ashiros, of money, of wealth, of success, and of happiness. There were two Gvirim, two Balabatim, two great Balei Tzedakah in the United States that did a Shidduch with one another. And the wedding was a different level. They renovated the hall in honor of the Simcha. They brought in orange trees to line the chuppah. There was a large philharmonic band that played when the Chassan and Kala walked down the chuppah. Of course, each of them gave a substantial amount of money and sponsored many tzedakas, many chassanas that evening. And at the chassana, there was a table of mutual friends of the Chassan and Kala's parents. Klal Yisrael's greatest philanthropist, the wealthiest of the wealthy. There was a table that was set up for 12, and for some reason, one of them wasn't able to show. It happens to be that the Kala's father had a first cousin who was a young man in Lakewood Yeshiva. He was not breaking, sat in the Torah day and night. He forgot to send his reply. In Lakewood, we don't send the replies anymore. You just come to Chassan, it says, Chassan's friends, table 1 through 17. Kala's friends, table 18 through whatever. That's what we don't. But this was one of those Chassans where you needed to send a reply card. And he comes, and he forgot to send a reply card. He has no seat. So he goes, look around, he feels awkward, and he comes to this table. He has no idea who's at this table. He's Allah Tarev Allah Vaida, that's his life. He says there's an empty seat. And one of the guys says, yeah, I heard this guy's not coming. Sure, sit down. So he sits down, they ask him his name. And one of the fellows says to him, so what do you do? Real estate. No. Healthcare. Nursing homes. ABA. He says, no, I'm the man in Beis Medrash Kavaya. Ah, very nice. Okay, shkayach. And one of the fellows there says, I've always wanted to talk to a young man. Can I ask you a question? How do you make ends meet? How do you put bread on the table? So he says, I'll tell you the truth, it's a struggle. I get a small stipend from the kollel. My wife works, I tutor at night, our in-laws help a little bit. But somehow, we never go hungry. And the children are always well-fed and well-dressed. We don't live with luxuries. We live very simply. But we're okay. And there was one of the fellows at the table that had a little bit of an edge to him, a little bit of cynicism. I call it cynicism chinam. And he says to the fellow, he says to him, ever think about this for a moment? The Kala's father makes in one day more than you make in a whole year. There was a silence at the table. And the young man says, I understand, but I want to tell you something. I have something that he doesn't have. And everyone says, yeah, what do you have? He says, I have enough. I have enough. I think that's the key to wealth. That's the key to happiness. And it's straight up in last week's parsha, in parsha's Vayishlach. When there's a dialogue between Esav and between Yaakov, Yaakov represents, I think, who we're supposed to be. And Esav represents who we're not supposed to be. And Yaakov says to, when they're discussing what they should do and how they should do it, and Yaakov says very simply, he says to his brother, he says to him, Yesh li koil. I have koil. What's koil? So look at Rashi, look at Targum, but particularly look at the Targum Yonison Ben Uziel. The Targum Yonison Ben Uziel translates and he says, Isli nichsin sagin. I have enough. Enough. And Esav, on the other hand, says, Yesh li rav. I have a lot. But I don't have enough. That's the difference. The difference between an usher and an ani is not how much money you have in your bank account, what type of car you drive, the home that you live in, the name brand clothing that you wear or don't wear. The difference is if you have enough. If you have enough, Ezo usher asameh mechelkei. You don't have enough, then you are a poor person. You're a pauper. Rabbi Avraham Chaim Feuer related many years ago, he wrote many svarim for the Farskor, Gifter son-in-law. Rabbi Chaim Feuer related that it was time to build his, he started off as a Rav in Miami, and it was a small shul, and he built a beautiful shul, he built a gorgeous kehillah, and it was time to build a new shul. And for some reason, the fundraising responsibilities fell on the Rav. I'm sure in England that would never happen. But in the United States, these type of things could happen. He became the director of development, like we like to call it in America. And he decides he has to raise money, a substantial amount of money for a new shul. So he decides he's going to go to his wealthiest balabas, a tremendous usher, and he's going to ask him to be his anchor donor. That's what it's called in fundraising. The guy who's going to start the campaign, he's going to kick it off. So he sits down in this guy's palatial mansion. The house isn't even like this. It has wings. The west wing and the east wing. It's like a bird. And he comes into the house. The fellow obviously welcomes him. The Rav is there. And the Rav says, you know that we're talking about building a new shul, and I was hoping you're a generous person. Baruch Hashem, Hashem blessed you. Hashem benched you. I was really hoping that you could perhaps make a substantial donation. How does $250,000, $500,000, I'm not sure what he asked him for. In those days, that was a fortune. Nowadays, it's not as much as used. But in those days, it was a... And the fellow says to him, listen, I appreciate where you're coming from, and I do want to help, but you need to understand something. He says, you know what the mortgage is on this house? You know what my car payments are every single month for my fleet of cars? You know what my mortgage is on my summer home? You know how much it costs to have a full-time help? You know how much my driver costs? It's by the end of the month, I barely make ends meet. On the contrary, I actually struggle. You're asking me to give on. I struggle to make ends meet at the end of the month. Rabbi Feuer says to him, again, the numbers are irrelevant. Rabbi Feuer says to him, how much would you need at the end of the month to really feel, to breathe easy, to sit back and relax? He says, if I had another $20,000 a month, I think I'd be comfortable. It's okay, I understand that. But I'll give you something, Rabbi. And he walked out a little bit disappointed. He didn't get that anchor donation. He says, you know what? Maybe this guy is too wealthy for his own health. So I'm going to go to the guy who's one tier down. He goes to the next guy, also a beautiful house, nice amount of cars parked, and he comes. And it's the same story, the same haluch yelech. I would love to give a large donation, but you need to understand, so Rabbi, something, Rabbi, between my vacation home and my regular home and my cars, I don't have that much money. And as a contrary, when it comes to the end of the month, I struggle. He says, how much would you need? He says, if I had $10,000 extra dollars each month, I'd be mamish sitting pretty. Okay. And as he goes and collects from the different people in his community, he goes down the ladder of wealth. Sulam is kesef, by the way, right? Goes down the ladder of wealth. And he goes down the ladder of wealth, and he comes to one of the final guys that he comes to collect from. There's a Rebbe in the local yeshiva. And he sits him down, and the guy gives him covered malachim, and he says to the Rav, how can I help you? And the Rav says, I'm here to collect, etc., etc. And he says, listen, we live on a shoestring budget. I'm going to try to give you what I could give you. And the Rav says to him, can I ask you just a random question, just to make life a little bit more easy? How much more money would you need a month to be happy, just to breathe easy? So if I had another $1,000 a month, I'd really be in a good spot. And the Rav said, he walked out, and he realized the most incredible thing, that this Rebbe was the wealthiest guy in his whole community. All he needed was $12,000 to be made good, to be made right. While that Gvir needed $240,000. So the gap between what he had and what he needed was huge. And the fellow who sat at the bottom of the ladder was the wealthiest guy in his whole shul. Yesh li kol. If you feel you have what you need, if even if the gap is a little gap, listen, we all have a little gap on human. But if you feel like, Baruch Hashem, the Rebbeinu Shlom provided enough, then you're the wealthiest guy in town. You're the biggest Aisher. And it doesn't make a difference how much money you have and the resources and how you live. It doesn't make a difference. Because if you're not satisfied, then you have nothing. Because whatever you have is never enough. And if you look interestingly enough by all the Avos, the Medrash says, it always says, Bakoil, Avram Avinu Bakoil, Yaakov says, Yesh li Koil. That's the bracha. The bracha of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov was that they realized they have Koil. This is what the Rebbeinu Shalom gave me. This is what I have. Rabbi Nachman writes, I don't often quote Rabbi Nachman, not because I'm against it, just and it's not the world I'm part of, but he writes something magnificent and amazing. Rabbi Nachman writes that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to Moshe Rabbeinu and he asked that each person in Klai Yisrael should give a machtzis, a shekel, a half a shekel towards the Mishkan, it says in Rashi, she showed him a coin of fire. So Rabbi Nachman says something fascinating and very beautiful. He says that fire is the most amazing thing. It provides heat, it provides light, and it provides good cooked, solid cooked food. But at the same time, on the flip side, on the other side of the coin, fire can be the most destructive force that exists. If it's uncontrolled and it's not, and it's just left on its own, who knows where it could get a person to? He says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him matbeya shel esh. He showed him a matbeya, he showed him a coin, but he also showed him that it's shel esh. When used properly, when appreciated, when understood that it comes from the Rebbeinu shel olam, then it's the most resourceful thing. It's the most useful thing, and it's a thing that enhances a person's life tremendously. But if a person doesn't realize the bracha that they have, and instead of looking at what they have, they look at what they don't have, then matbeya shel esh, then it could be the most destructive force that exists out there. The Chovis HaLevavos, it's interesting, someone yesterday, on Matzah Shabbos, I was sitting next to a fellow from New York on a bus, and he told me the following. He learns B'chavrusa with one of Klal Yisrael's tremendously wealthy people, a Chashev Ben Torah, and he's very close to him. And he said to him one time that the Chovis HaLevavos writes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Ashiris to a person for one of three reasons. Either he gives it to him as schar, as reward, or he gives it to him as an oynish, a punishment, or he gives it to him as a nisayim, as a test, a challenge. What's the litmus test? How does a person know if the wealth that HaKadosh Baruch Hu benched them with is a bracha, it's a klala, or if it's a nisayim? It depends what happens when a person gets that wealth. If they become a better person, a greater Ovid Hashem, if their heart opens wider, if they have more bitachon, once they get the bracha of Ashirus, they know it's a bracha. If they become more self-centered, arrogant, and conceited, then it's a klala. And if they're not sure, it's probably a klala. And what is the test? The test is if they can appreciate what they have, or if it turns them into a person that just constantly wants more. Because if Misha Yesh Lemeah writes a Messiah, and if you have 100, you need 200, the gap is only 100. But if you have Messiah and you need Aramaeus, the gap is 200. So Zok Techeves Alevavos, that's what it's there for. It's a well-known Maisa with the Divrei Chaim, with the Tzanzer Rav. He was once standing, looking out the window of his home. And he saw a chusadl, a guy walked by, and he said, Moshe to the fellow, Kintara, come in. By the way, I have a personal connection to the Divrei Chaim, or just as an aside, many, many generations back in the times of the Divrei Chaim, my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was a very fabrenta misnagit. He was very not pro-chassidus, to put it mildly, which the Jewish world was divided at that period of time. And he had no children. His business partner was a fabrenta chusid. And his business partner kept saying to him, go to my Rebbe, the Divrei Chaim. And if you go to the Divrei Chaim, I'll give you a brucha. And he gives you a brucha, you can have a kid. It's a slam dunk. And he says, I don't know, I'm not going. I'm a misnagit, I don't go to chassidus rebbes. And one day his wife heard about it. She says, you and your shittas are going to leave us childless. Go to the Rebbe. Take down your ego for one day. So he travels to the Rebbe. And the Rebbe says to him, I'm willing to be Mavtiach Yehoshua's son. I'm the condition. And when he turns bar mitzvah, I raise him. The ultimate dilemma. And they did it. And he became pretty chassidish. And when the Reb Chaim was nifter, he had a white Yom Kippur kapel, a yarmulke that he wore, and it was given to this particular great-great-grandfather, and it was in our mishpacha until World War II, and then it was lost. So getting back to the Divrei Chaim, there's a personal connection here. So Divrei Chaim is standing by the window to the street of where he lived, in Sanz, and he calls a guy in. And he says to him, Reb Yid, Shum Aleichem, and with great trepidation, the Yid comes into the Divrei Chaim, it wasn't a pasha thing, he says, yes, Rebbe. So I want to ask you a simple question. Imagine that you just walked by my house and you found a wallet packed with wads of cash and there's no identification in it. Just a simple wallet. The wallet is a simple wallet. There's a lot of money in there. What would you do with the money? And the Yid says, Rebbe, I would put signs up all over Sanz, found the wallet. I'm sure some Yid is hurting. They lost their money. I would do that. And the Rebbe says to him, Shakran. Calls another Yid off the street. And he says to him, Shum Aleichem Rebid. Again, the guy walks in with the Ema the Kedusha. And he says to him, let me ask you a question. If you found a wallet, it's got a wad of cash in it, there's no identifying symbols, there's no simanim, what would you do with it? Yid says, listen, Rebbe, I'm struggling financially. I need the money. I'm making a chasen on this and that. I would say, Shkoyach Rebbein Shalom, thank you for the matuna. The Divrei Chaim said to him, Russia. And then the Divrei Chaim called a third guy in. He said to him, let me ask you a question. What would you do if you found a wallet that had a big wad, fat wad of cash, and there was no identifying symbols, there was no simanim inside of it, what would you do? And the Yid stands there for a minute and he vacillates and he says, Damis Rebbe, I'm not sure what I would do. My Yetzer Tov would tell me, come on, probably a Yid dropped it, probably not a guy. It's a guy drops. Maybe it's mutter, I should go with Nimashur Sadin. Is it right if this? And my Yetzer Hara would say, pocket it. It's a gift from the Rebbeinu Shlom. It's a gift from the gods. Take it. And the Divrei Chaim said to him, Yira Erlich Hayid. And he turned to the other fellows and he said to them, I didn't ask you what you should do with the money. I didn't ask you what you would do with the money. I asked you what you should do with the money. And this, I didn't ask you what you should do, I asked you what you would do. And this fellow, he says, he told me what he would do. He didn't know what he would do. And the truth is, that's really where most people are. We could talk a good talk. The question is if we could walk a good walk. The Rebbeinu Shlom gives a person, whatever your financial situation is, how do you view it? And I think sometimes we view it like a tremendous gift. Thank you so much, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we look at what we have. And sometimes we look at what we don't have. Or we look at the guy next to us who's driving the nicer car, who has the nicer situation. That's really how it is. And that's really the struggle of every single year, regardless of their financial situation. Is it a matbea shalesh in a positive way, in a constructive way, or is it a matbea shalesh in a destructive way? My Rosh Hashiva, Rav Gifter Zichron Bracha, used to always say on last week's, 2 weeks ago's parasha, that Yaakov Avinu comes to Rebbeinu Shalom, and he says to Rebbeinu Shalom, he davens, and he says, if you give me lechem lechol, bread to eat, ubeyad lil boish, and clothing to wear, v'shapti v'sholom v'beisavi, v'yashem li lelekim. That's what he asked. Perfect Rosh Hashiva, what? Lechem, it would be lechem. What else do you do with bread besides lechem? Okay, you make your kids sandwiches and they don't eat. But what does it mean, lechem lechem? And beged lilbush. What else do you do with a beged if not lilbush? What else is a beged for? And the Rashiva used to say that that's a silly question. Because take a look at the world around us. And especially in 2024, almost 2025, we'll start with the beged lilbush. How many people wear clothing because they need something nice and respectful so they could look like a presentable person? And how many people wear clothing so that people should see the clothing that they're wearing? I'm sure in England this machla hasn't appeared, but where I live in Lakewood, there's this name brand, Mishagas, where Bachrim are wearing name brand belts that cost $300. What, because they changed the name on it to hold your pants up better? I look at those belts and I think one thing, it's a waste, no pun intended. Right? Okay, I'll buckle down. Sorry, Rabbi, sorry. It's too early in the morning. Rabbi Shlom, you have a yeshiva bucher, and you're wearing a $300 belt, because that's not the beged lilboish. That's beged so Yiddish should see, gvir culture. I want to be Tayru Gedula B'Makom Echad, that's my aspiration. And it goes across the board, it's with coats, it's also, Baruch Hashem, I didn't see this in London, but there's a certain brand, which I can't say in the Beis Medrash, which has two funny symbols, and and people wear the coats like $1,200 for the same exact coat that you could buy for $200 or even less. Because the beged's not lilboish. The beged, so Yiddish should look and say, he's a fine schmecker. He made it. He was successful. And Rabbi Sai, even Lechem Lechem. We go to Kiddushim, hopefully this is not in England. You go to Kiddushim, you go to Simchas. Is the food there so the Olam should participate and it should be Einik Shabbos and it should be Chvayd the Simcha? Or people should walk in and say, ah, charcuterie boards. You don't know what that is, right?
No.
It's like the big meat platters with the dried meats. I saw that in England. You don't have to say anything. What's it there for? You're going home to eat a suda with your mishpacha, so you should eat two sudas before? Herod says, it's not Lechem Lechem. It's not a shtickle bromfen. A bit of lekech, a kichel and some herring, a bit of shlivovitz. It's not what it is. It's tequila. I don't think you know what that is?
Tequila.
I walked into a simcha, there were 6 or 7 huge bottles of tequila. I said to the achsania, ah, a tequila gedoyla. That's not lechem lechem. That's lechem so yenishitzi. And Zotar Yeshiva, the litmus test is, Vaya Hashem lilei lekim. If a person lives their life for Hay Hashem Lilei Lekim, and they constantly focus on the brachas that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them, and they look at what they have, and there's sameach b'chalkei, then it's lechem lechel, and it's beged lubash, and there's nothing wrong with wearing a good quality coat. It keeps you warm, and you look like a mensch. But it's when you're doing it for something else, that's the challenge, that's the struggle, that's the problem, and we need to look in the mirror when we're wearing that coat and say, why are we wearing this coat? Is this coat so yenish? Walk by and say, psh. Or so I could put it on and say, ah, Machai, thank you, Rebbeinu Shlomo, Malbish Aruma. And one time I asked Rabbi Tzio Salomon, I was very fortunate, for almost 10 years, we had a private vad with Rabbi Tzio Salomon every Wednesday around his dining room table, and we daven mincha with him. So I went to Master Rabbi Tzio, you know, at the Agudat Convention in America, they have a session every year called Asking for a Friend. And people send in questions. It's all the questions they want to ask, but they're too embarrassed to say they're asking it on their behalf. So they say, I'm asking this question for a friend. So this was Mamish asking for a friend. This was Emesdik asking for a friend. I said, let's say a guy's building, he's a big veer, and he's building a massive house. At what point does, what do you allow, what's okay? Like, how big could your house be before it's moisturous? How big could your house be before, well, give guidance here. I said, I'm asking for a friend. It's not Lugel Amaisa. I'm not building a big house. You have nothing to worry about. I'm an Avodas HaKodesh. I'm investing in eternal real estate. So he says, listen to what Matzio said, it's very, very important. Matzio said like this, if a guy's a gvir, and he's giving 20% of his money to tzedakah, he could build the largest, most gorgeous house that he wants to build. It could have radiant, heated floors. It could have a driveway that melts the snow. It could be a smart house with a Shabbos feature. It could have Italian marble. It could have whatever you want. En baya. Hashem benched you, enjoy the bracha. But the moment that the thought flits through your mind, when Yenna walks by, he's going to see those two lions in front of my house. The moment you transition from, I want a nice house for me, for my mishpacha, for whatever it is. The moment you transition, I'm building a nice house so that guy should see it. That moment you need to stop the construction project. Because then it's no longer beged lech, lechem lechel, and beged lilbosh. Or by a slugger boy, it's so yenish at sea. Then you're heading down a rat hole. And then you need to stop the construction project and take a hard look at yourself. That's what he said. And it doesn't have to be only for the uber wealthy building large homes. It's also in our own lives, wherever we are. If we're comfortable with who we are, and we look at the brachas and the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu benched us, then we have what we need. And then it's the Begem Lechem Lechel, and it's the Beged Lilbosh. That's true Ashiris. There's a Medrash somewhere which I never saw, but Mezuk that it's a Medrash. And the Medrash says that the word Ashir is Rosh HaTevois, Ayin is Einayim, Shin is Shinayim, Yud is Yodayim, Resh is Raglayim. It's you. That's the Ashiris. It's not what you have. It's not what you have, it's what you are. We know, obviously, you have a person that has any challenges in any of these areas. No money in the world can help them, but even on a simpler level, what we are is our wealth, not what we have. That's not our Ashiris. Just recently, I was at a barbecue, and Shaul Mordechai Rabashkin showed up. And he shared with the Olam that a guy gave him a ride one morning to Shachris, and the guy said to him, Shaul Mordechai, at your height, at the pinnacle of your wealth, because he was a big veer before he was taken down by the government, how much were you worth? So Shaul Mordechai said, I was never worth anything. What do you mean you weren't worth anything? You had a huge a huge agro-processors, a big company, which provided chicken and meat for a huge part of the American Jewish community. Sure, how much are you worth? I said, well, I was never worth anything. He said, what do you mean? But how much was your company making a year? My company was making $315 million a year, but I wasn't worth anything because from one day to the next, it wasn't there. And when you look at life that way, the things you have isn't what you are. It's who you are that's what you are. And that, Rosh Hashanah Mordechai said, was such an important lesson. The man sat and languished in jail for who knows how long. And he realized that anything he had before was absolutely nothing, was taken away, kaharifying. And that's how things that we have happen to us. They go away, kaharifying. And the question is, what happens to a person when they have a Yerida or an Aliyah? Do they become a better person, like the Chavos Al Bava says? Then it's a bracha. But if they become a person who struggles more, then it's an assignment. And Chas Hashem, it makes a person depressed because they lost it. Or makes them conceited because they got it. Well, then maybe it's a einish. And maybe the whole thing is not worth it. I want to share a beautiful maisa to conclude that I heard directly from somebody who was involved. And then I called the Baal HaMaisa. And he told me I can't say his name, but I could share the story. I know last night you had Deer Shoe here in England. And I don't know, 8,000 people came? 7,000 people came? Okay, so just to create a little bit of kina, to look outside of yourself. Each year we have an event in Lakewood called Adirei HaTorah, where we take a basketball arena in Philadelphia and we sell it out. And there's between 20 and 30,000 people that come for one reason, and that's to celebrate the highest level of people in Klal Yisrael, those that sit and learn full time. It's one of the most beautiful, inspirational, gorgeous events that exists in Klal Yisrael. And I'm telling you, if you're planning on going to vacation to Cancun or to wherever you're going, to the French, cancel your vacation and book a ticket and go to Adirei Torah. You'll come back a different person. So there's a kollel in a particular out-of-town community in the United States of America. And this kollel is somewhat not in the larger from world. It's in one of the cities that's a little further out. Tanyum the light who sit and learn al Torah va'avayda. And you know, sometimes when you're sitting in an out-of-town kollel and you're not plugged into the larger kollel world, you feel a little isolated. The majority of the population in your city are not necessarily into learning the way you are. So the toymich of the kollel, the fellow who supports the kollel, told the young light, I would like you all to go to Adirei HaTorah on my dime. I'll sponsor for it. I want you all to go to this Adirei HaTorah. You'll go there, you'll feel so mechuzak, you'll feel so inspired and uplifted, and you'll come back and you'll be so much more on fire to learn. It'll have a greater impact. And he says, but more than that, because I plan on going. Of course I'm going to go. I'm a big toymich of the Lakewood Yeshiva. And I happen to have a private jet. So instead of you guys having to go to the airport and Shmir Seinayim and challenges and delays, you come on my private jet. And I'll take you to, you'll just go in, you go out, it's going to be perfect. You won't even miss second Seder. 2 days before Adirei HaTorah, so this Gvir, this wealthy person, this Taimich Torah, calls the Rosh Kollel and he says, I just need a final tally how many guys are going. He says, 10 guys. And there's a pause at the other end of the line and the fellow says, okay, Gavaldi, perfect. Rabbi Isai, the plane has 10 seats. The Gvir was planning on being one of the 10 guys. Now I heard that there's 10 guys going. So of course, he took his private jet and he flew commercial airlines. Because he has Yungalat. He has the wealthiest people. He has the top of the chain. And those people need to get to yeshiva, they need to get to the event and back into the Beis Medrash. And for him, if it's a little bit of a hassle, so it's a little bit of a hassle. Nishkeferlich. And he flew a regular commercial airline, and the Yungalite flew his private jet. That's Ashiris. That's wealth. That's understanding Lechem Lechel, Beged Lilbosh. That's understanding the beautiful part of the Matbea Shalesh. That's understanding that the wealth that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us is to enable others. That's understanding priorities in life. And that's the Chavos Al Bavos definition of a person who has wealth. And it's a matana from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Or maybe an Nisayon that he passed. And when I asked him, I just want to verify the story. He says, of course you could share it further, but please don't say my name. And that's how I know he's authentic. And that's how I know that he's real. The Rabbi Yisrael should bench each and every one of us with Ashiras materially, with Ashiras spiritually, and we should understand that at every stage of our life we should be able to look ourselves in the mirror and say, Yesh Li Kail, the Mida of the Avais, we are their descendants, and it's within us. We should appreciate what we have, and in Mitzvah Shem, that's the greatest level of Ashir Shatzlach Rav. Have a beautiful day.